Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media Podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as bonus content every single week, subscribers also get access to additional episodes where we respond to their best comments. Gain access to that content at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph, and with me are all of the 404 Media co-founders, the first being Sam Cole.
Hello.
Emmanuel Mayberg.
Hey, what's up?
And Jason Kebler.
I'm so happy we're all here.
Dude, finally.
Getting back together.
Exactly. All holding hands, jumping around, dancing around the fire. Did you miss me?
Yes. Yeah.
That's the most unconvincing response I've ever heard in my entire life. That
can't put us on the spot like that. It's like, yeah, of course. Did you miss us, more importantly?
Our dear readers, our dear listeners?
Our dear listeners, yes. You, yes. No, of course I did.
Just spent the entire weekend just sad. The entire week sad that you weren't talking to us.
I mean, basically, yeah. Speaking of talking to you, let's get straight into it with this wild story from Jason. Inside the world of TikTok spammers and the AI tools that enable them. I think before we get into this wild ecosystem that you've uncovered, maybe start with what it is they're producing, because you actually came across these very strange AI-generated videos yourself, right, across TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. Like, what do they look like and how did you come across them?
Yeah, so if you've been on TikTok and have seen, like, Reddit posts, I don't know how to describe them other than there's, like, Minecraft parkour footage in the background, which is where, like, a character, an invisible screen is just, like, hopping across blocks, like, platformer blocks, like gameplay video, and then there's an AI voice and it just reads Reddit posts, more or less. It's like from Ask Reddit, or it's from, you know, like r/relationships, like various dramas, things like that, like Am I the Asshole, things like that. So there's that. There's a whole genre of would you rather videos where it's like, would you rather be blue or red? And then
that's a good one.
I don't know. Yeah, thank you. You just like answer it yourself.
I've seen definitely the Minecraft Reddit ones. For me, it was a little while ago. Like, I haven't seen them super recently. I guess my algorithm changed in some sort of way, but I definitely remember them appearing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a few that are like ChatGPT image generators. So you like talk to ChatGPT and you say like, make me a cell phone. Then you say, make me $100 cell phone, make me $1,000 cell phone, make it more expensive. And it just like pops up and gets more and more outlandish. And it's just videos of that. There's sort of like a bunch of slideshow ones as well that are still images. But basically, it's like low effort TikToks. The genres change pretty regularly, but they are relatively like like I've come across them in my day-to-day life. And then Emmanuel actually came across sort of like the world where this was being made. And then I dove into it because I don't know, I'm rude and I took it from Emmanuel, but
Emmanuel, how did you find it? If you don't mind saying.
So I should note that I am not on TikTok. I have taken the outlandish position that I'm a Reels guy. So I'm on Reels. Yeah, I don't know. So. I decided that, yeah, maybe it's a dad thing. I'm not on TikTok. I'm on Reels.
And not to make light of it, but isn't the reason that you're on Reels is because like you found TikTok to be like too addictive? It's like this is like a lower ABV version of TikTok for you.
Yeah, it's like the TikTok methadone. It's like I can't handle TikTok, so I deleted it. And then I had Instagram for some reason, probably for work, because I was DMing someone. And then it just started feeding me Reels, and I got addicted to Reels. So now I'm on Reels. Really stupid. Anyway, I'm on Reels. I'm scrolling, and I couldn't tell you exactly. Well, I can't tell you exactly why. I saw a video from one of these creators that we mentioned in the story, and it was focused on CapCut. And CapCut is an editing tool, which I think also works on mobile phones. And it was just like, hey, I make $15,000 a month just by using this CapCut app. And it walks you through the process. And much like what Jason described, it's about finding an easily reproducible type of video, ideally one that you can automate the creation of in some way. And I thought it was such a crazy get-rich-quick scheme that I sent it to myself, or I DM'd it to Jason or something like that. And when you do that, the algorithm is just takes that as a very strong signal that right. that is what you're interested in. And I just was stuck in that world of semi-automated or fully automated content hustling for the sole purpose of making money, not because you're interested in making videos, not because you're interested in a certain topic or journalism, nothing. Just, hey, you want to make some easy money? Here's how you can produce either Reels or TikTok videos very, very quickly. Literally, sometimes they're like 100 videos a week or 1,000 videos a week or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you find it, you give it to Jason, and then before we drill down into like there's a specific de facto leader somewhat of this community who we'll get into, and then the tools that he recommends and all that. But Jason, I think you describe as an ecosystem, right? Before we get into the specifics, what is that ecosystem? There's like the tools and the platforms and then all of these other services that these people use. Like, what is in that ecosystem?
Yeah, so there is like the influencers who I would say are sort of like at the top. I'm going to describe a pyramid, but
but for legal reasons,
I'm going to describe a pyramid. Or how about a
pyramid shaped scheme? That's not the same as a pyramid scheme. Okay.
It's a triangle
at the top
plan.
There are influencers and they are making content that is like crazily edited. It's like, hey, I made $12,000 while I was skiing in Tahoe, like from my phone. You can learn how to do it just like me. And they start talking about these apps. And then you go into their bio and you click on their sort of like link in bio. And they're essentially selling like an ebook in the same way that the like hustler bros who are like, just buy an Airbnb, like, do here's how you do Airbnb. It's unclear whether those people were ever doing Airbnb, but they were definitely like selling guides on how to do Airbnb. So all of these influencers are like selling access to Discords where you learn the real secrets of the content gurus. And then you like pay, I paid $40 to get into one of these Discords. So it's either a Discord or it's like an ebook or like a series of courses. Like each influencer sort of has a different spin on it. And you get into these Discords, you pay $40 to unlock sort of the bigger area. And it's just full of people who are trying to make these videos, trying to go viral, and people who are selling services to them. So you go in the Discord and it's like 5 hours of Andrew Tate clips, like referring to sort of this red pill, super far right psycho. Mm-hmm. there's people selling the gameplay footage. There's people selling, you know, like ASMR videos that you can then sort of clip down. Then there's people selling what they call niches. So a niche is what it sounds like, kind of, but it's like, what is your account going to be? Like the account that's going to go viral. Is it going to be making Reddit clips? Is it going to be doing would you rather videos? Something that was really popular on TikTok for a long time was like the ocean is scary facts, like deep sea, like pirates at sea and stuff like that.
Is this the North Sea TikTok?
Yes. Like okay, that wow. entire like thing came from this world. Like someone realized that it was working. And so then that niche became the meta. The meta meaning like an overpowered content type, which sort of refers to like meta in video games. It's like if a gun is overpowered in Call of Duty and then everyone starts doing it, it's called the meta. And it's literally the same in this world. It's like, oh, North Sea, super scary, like pirate videos that are taken from like National Geographic documentaries or whatever, and then cut to like scary music, is overperforming on TikTok. It's the new meta. You get like thousands of people trying to make these, and then you get people selling footage to make these videos on the Discord. And then there's also this entire ecosystem of people who are selling accounts, because what they're doing is they are using this program called the TikTok Creativity Beta, which is basically like, it's funny because TikTok is trying to pay money so that people will make longer videos of original content. So it's for like videos that are over 1 minute long, and that if you get certain number of views, you just get money from TikTok. And so this program is only available in the United States, France, United Kingdom, and I believe Germany. And most of, or many of the people who are doing this are not in one of those countries. And so there are people, like there's this one guy who says that he's in Oklahoma and he's buying prepaid cell phone service, like SIM cards, making 10 TikTok accounts on them and then selling them, throwing away the phone or just getting a new SIM card and just like creating these accounts that have been created in the United States. They're tied to a US phone number.
Yep.
And then you can like participate in this program from Bangladesh or wherever. And to that end, it's like there are also people who are sort of like selling access to their US tax IDs, so they're like social security numbers or their employer tax numbers, because when you get paid out by TikTok, you have to be paid out in one of these countries. So there's like a middleman who's like taking a 25% cut, getting paid, and then sending that money on to the person whose account it actually was. And so it's just like this huge ecosystem of people like trying to make tons of money by just like spamming out as much content as possible, sort of like using the secret tips of these influencers. And the secret tips of these influencers, like when you read them and watch them, it's like just steal other people's content. Like across the board, that is the advice. It's like the first video I watched in this secret area that I paid $40 to access was like, sort YouTube by trending videos. Go to the top trending video, find a clip, and post it on TikTok. It's just like, steal it.
Great advice.
Is that also stolen? Are the top trending videos stolen?
So they do advocate stealing from other people who also steal from people. Like one of the videos was for like, the suggestion was like, steal videos from Daily Dose of Internet, which is just viral clips. It's just viral clips on YouTube that they have like 17 million subscribers. And it's just like, literally just lift theirs off of YouTube and post them on TikTok, but then use an AI voice to voice over like the intro so that TikTok detects it as a different video because it has like a different voice on it.
Gotcha.
But take the clip and just like post it. And then I found that like I bought some of the guides once I was in there. So I like bought things from some of the middlemen, like some clips. I got some Andrew Tate clips. I got things like this. I got all these guides. And it was so funny because a lot of the guides were just links to other people's YouTube videos. It's like I paid like $4 for like a link to a public YouTube video that had 800,000 views from just someone else. They sell these niche lists of like 80 different ideas that you could have for your own TikTok channel. And that ideas list was just a screenshot of someone else like in Discord posting some ideas that they had. And the ideas are just like 911 calls, animal videos, like it's deep like, sea fishing.
It's grifting on top of grifting, on top of grifting. It's crazy.
Yeah, my favorite one, and I didn't include this in the article because I didn't buy it because it was like $12. And I was just like, this is crazy. Was a guide to making money selling guides on Media Metas, which is the name of the Discord. So I saw it like right after I published the story. So I may go and get it, but it's like a $12 how-to guide to making how-to guides to selling how-to guides on this Discord. It's just like about stealing other people's content.
That's
it's
beautiful.
Very funny.
It's funny that you have all these guides and then the trade of those guides, that's not too dissimilar to like the underground carding community. When you go to the dark web marketplaces and they'd be like, hey, do you need the Apple Pay technique? Do you need the new contactless one? Or do you need like a carding guide? You would pay $10 to $50 or whatever for a guide. And I obtained some of them and often they turned out to be pretty shit. To be honest, like it's just another grift as well. Talking about a specific person though, and that brings us to the AI tools, who is Musa Mustafa? Where do they stand in this ecosystem?
So Musa Mustafa calls himself the Algorithm King, and dude, it's his Discord that I joined. Yes. He goes viral like all the time on Reels for like, here's how I make all this money. He was the editor for this Twitch streamer for a while and sort of like helped him get famous. And he's been like written about in this world or sort of like mentioned all the time. It's like this is like the biggest guy. His Discord has 80,000 people in it. And he uses this program called WAP, which is like a Patreon or a like a Stripe type thing that you like pay WAP $40 and then you're invited into the secret Discord channels. And WAP itself, like the company, interviewed him. And he told them that, or rather they're like, you make 7 figures selling access to your Discord. So he's making $1 million a year, at least according to his platform provider, sort of selling access to the Discord. But then he also advertises all of these AI tools outside of this, like as sort of like influencer marketing that are designed to make all of this a lot easier. Yeah. And that was actually one of my intros to this. It's like I sort of on the same evening found this Discord, but then also my Roomba broke. And so I was like, oh, I need to fix this Roomba error 14. And normally I just like type that into YouTube and I find some like random person who has like a very detailed explanation of how they fixed this. But there was barely any videos about this. And I clicked on YouTube and it was an obviously AI generated video about what error 14 is. And it was like really shitty. And I was like, what is this? I sort of immediately clocked it as AI and I started clicking through and I found this tool. I found that the guy who was like posting these on YouTube was using this tool called Visla. And it basically is like a ChatGPT to stock video creator. And so I got an account there and then I bought an account with this tool called Creo, which is the one that that Musa and other people are pushing. And then there's a few others and they basically propose to like you type one sentence and we spit out a fully done video.
maybe that's a good time to play some of the video you created, right? So let me play that now.
All right, so you want to learn some fun facts, huh? Buckle up, cause I've got the top 5 unknown gems for YA. Fact number 1, did you know that a group of flamingos is called a flamboyance? Yep, those fabulous birds sure know how to party. Fact number 2, in Japan, letting a sumo wrestler make you cry is considered a good luck charm. Better stock up on those tissues. Fact number 3, honey never spoils. That's right, you could be snacking on some ancient honey right now. Fact number 4, bananas are berries, but strawberries aren't.
Wow.
Wow.
I didn't know that about bananas and strawberries, did you?
No, sorry. I feel like I was far too distracted by the insane visuals that I should probably describe for audio listeners, in that that's just Minecraft gameplay. Like, yeah, there's somebody jumping from block to block. Is that right? And the audio is playing and there's subtitles. So how did you make that video? I know you touched on it, but how did you make that?
So I bought access to the tool called Creo AI.
Right.
And then I clicked generate story. And then I typed, make me a video about 5 unknown facts. And then I clicked, I selected the Minecraft gameplay footage, as in, like, they give you an option. It's like Minecraft, Grand Theft Auto, or Subway Surfers, which is like.
And that's already loaded in.
It's already loaded in. Huh. It's already in there. It's like, which one of these do you want? They also have like power washing videos that you can like have in the background, which are also, I don't know, relaxing and sort of popular on TikTok.
Uh-huh.
And then it gives you a few different options for music. And then it gives you 10 options for AI voices. And then you can also tweak like how excited do you want the AI voice to sound? So you can like, it's like a slider. And then you click generate video, and then it like literally it just spits out the video. It takes like 10 seconds. The whole process takes like 10 seconds.
I mean, you can see why and how these people are able to basically automate this entire process. Yeah.
Right. And the the Creo people, the people who make this tool called Creo are in the Media Meta's Discord. Like, they're in Musa's Discord, and they, like, I don't know exactly how it got created, but one could imagine they're like, we see that you're wasting all of this time typing prompts into ChatGPT and then generating voices using 11 Labs, which is an AI voice generator. And then you're stitching it together in CapCut like an idiot, wasting all this time, like clicking and dragging. It's like, we're going to just take care of the entire process for you. And that's what they made. It's like, it's making what I would consider to be very low quality videos, but I think that the game, or what they're trying to do, is like just anything, like publish anything. And Creo sort of advertises like, make unlimited short videos, like unlimited. We can just spit them out. Mm-hmm. And right now you can only make one at a time. So you're sort of limited to making one video every 10 to 15 seconds. So pretty slow.
Dude, so slow. Why even
whereas
bother?
Like, what they propose in the future is you could say like, make me 100 videos about 5 facts and use like 100 different gameplay backgrounds, and theoretically would spit it out. It's like Creo launched, it's still in beta. It's like brand new software. So I don't know. I don't like it.
Yes.
I'm not into it.
I mean, I think just before we get to sort of the takeaway, which I felt you were leading to, let me play this video, which I think is this from Mustafa, or is it from somebody else?
This is not Mustafa, but this one went extremely viral on Twitter. Like 10 million people viewed it like earlier this week. It's the same thing though. Same
sure.
thing.
Sure. All right. I'll play that, and it will give people an example of the sort of people who were involved in this.
Day in the life of a teenager making $14.6K a month. First thing I do when I wake up is always go to the beach just to get some fresh air. Then I find a comfy spot and get ready to start my shift. First thing I do is go into ChatGPT and ask it to make me a $1 pancake. Then I ask it to make a $100 pancake, all the way up to $1 million pancake. Then I screenshot all these messages and go on to YouTube. Here I'm gonna simply record some Minecraft gameplay and take it all to CapCut. Here you're gonna put the Minecraft gameplay in the background and the screenshots on the top. Then you're simply gonna go to 11labs.io and screen record AI voice for all these messages. Then I'm gonna add that in as well, and it should look something like this.
Make a $1 pancake.
All right, and then it'll be a video.
So
like
all the painstaking work that he just describes that he does, if you can't see, if you're just listening to this, he's like literally on the beach, and he has another one where he does it from a helicopter, and he has another one where he does it from a ski slope. It's like all of this painstaking work that takes 1 second to do, but it's still like disparate steps, is automated by Creo. Like they have this exact same format, the make me a dollar pancake, make me a $100 pancake, make me a $1 million pancake, built into the system. You can do this in like, I did it 10 times. It takes like 5 seconds, and they're shitty. I would never watch one of these. I would scroll past it immediately, but I don't know. I guess people are sort of transfixed by the gameplay video.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, Creo eventually will be able to churn out hundreds at a time or something like that. I'm sure we'll be there very, very soon. Just my last question is, what does this flood of content mean for TikTok and Instagram and the platforms, and maybe even like, you know, the internet writ large? What does this mean for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great takeaway here, because I think that TikTok is actually doing a pretty good job of preventing this stuff from going viral. It's like the Discord is full of thousands of people posting links to their TikToks, being like, I'm doing what you told me to do. I'm making these videos and I'm not rich yet. Like, what's the deal? And I don't think that that was the case a few months ago, because I was seeing a lot of this kind of like nonsense on my For You page. And I was trying to look for examples of really high performing ones. And I think that they're doing an okay job of filtering this stuff out. That said, it's like in the same way that we've written about, you know, AI generated content surfacing on Google and that sort of thing. It's like it lowers the barrier to entry so much that you can just like flood these platforms with so much shit that it doesn't, you don't need that many of them to actually take off for it to be annoying for the platform or annoying for the user or more difficult for people who are like spending a lot of time making high quality content on these platforms. So I don't think it's a good thing. I think that it is still very interesting because they're making so much of it. And then two more things. One, we're recording this on Riverside right now. It's a podcasting software. It's like Riverside has introduced a lot of AI tools to make like vertical video cut downs of what we're making right now a lot easier. And we use those tools, and they are, and every editor uses those tools. It's like Adobe Premiere has these sorts of tools, like the sort of auto transcription and then text editing tools in them. It's like, while I think AI is like kind of bullshit on a lot of fronts, it's like in the video editing space, it is lowering the barrier to entry in a lot of ways.
Right.
That said, it's like, I don't know. I don't feel bad about using Riverside to make cutdowns of what we are doing. It saves us a lot of time, and our value, in my opinion, is like our reporting and us sort of talking about those sorts of things. And that's what I've found on these Discords, is that the things that are going viral is the stolen content. And it's like when they're stealing high quality content from other people,
right?
That is like how they are going viral. Like, they're not really able to go viral with shitty ideas spun up through these like AI tools. It's like when they're stealing comedian clips or, you know, Joe Rogan clips or whatever, it's like, say what you want about any of these things, it's like these people have an audience and a fan base, and they're sort of like drifting on that, which I don't know if that makes anyone feel better, but it's just like, oh, oh, people want to see high quality content. They just don't really care if it's stolen or like these platforms aren't that fast at taking them down. A lot of these accounts do get taken down for copyright violations, which is why they're trying to use AI. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it's not, sometimes it takes months or years for people to catch that their stuff's being stolen.
Yeah. Well, a really, really crazy story. And if people want more videos, go check out the piece because there are many more embedded in there. I wanted to go a little bit long with that one just because it is so crazy. But when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about more people ripping off work, I guess. I guess that's one way to put it. We will be right back after this.
I'm Samantha Cole, host of the new season of Understood, the Pornhub Empire. Over the course of four episodes, I'll tell you how a horny YouTube knockoff in Canada came to dominate the porn world, only to shatter their cheeky reputation in a massive scandal. The Pornhub Empire is a new season of Understood from the CBC. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. This is one that Sam wrote. Fan fiction community rocked by Etsy sellers turning their work into bound books. I mean, as the headline says, the top lines that Etsy sellers are taking people's free fan fiction and then turning those into physical and crucially paid products. Sam, how did you come across this, first of all, and then we'll get into the issue?
Yeah, I was wondering this myself. It's one of those things that just kind of drifted by, and I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting that it even ended up in my feed. I will just say right off the bat as a disclaimer, and in case I say anything wrong about the fanfic world, I'm not in that world myself, but I love it, and I think it's super interesting. But I guess a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter are, like, right. I'm kind of overlapping with those folks. Which makes sense. But I saw people tweeting about some pretty popular, well-known fanfic writers were taking down their entire bodies of work because of this problem of people ripping off their stuff and then reselling it as like a bound physical book on Etsy. And one of the like subcultures communities that's being affected by this the most heavily is called Dramini. That's Draco and Hermione shippers. So that's like a really, really popular genre. People are obsessed with these books. And I think one of them is even like one of the writers who I mentioned in the story has a book coming out that's based on their fanfic. So it's like, it is like a little bit of a pipeline to become like a known published author. But then you have, you know, people taking their work and selling it without permission,
right,
on sites like Etsy.
What's the pricing like for some of these books?
Oh my god, they're super expensive. It's like $160 for a book, which like some of them have disclaimers in their shops that say this is to cover materials and labor, which when you think about it that way, it's probably pretty fair. Like if you're gonna commission a book, a bound book from someone, $160 is probably like pretty fair.
Like to order. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I wrote something and I said, I want to bind this, I want to pay someone to bind this, I would be like, yeah, that's probably about right. But they're taking, you know, the work completely from someone else's like archive of our own. That's a website that people put their free fanfic on. They're taking it from there and putting it in book form. But yeah, they're kind of up there. They're kind of pricey, but people are obsessed. So they will pay lots of money.
Why
to have, like, one of these on their shelves?
Sure. Maybe you can't answer this, but like, why do the Etsy sellers feel they can do this? Or like, why do they feel they should? You know what I mean? Like, they're taking somebody's I'm not going to use the word intellectual property because I'm not a lawyer. I'm going to say they're taking somebody's creative output, which has been released for free for people's enjoyment, and their own enjoyment, and they're turning that into a paid product. Like, if you know, why do the Etsy sellers feel they can do that?
I think that's kind of where it gets tricky. And I mean, I think part of it is like they feel entitled to it because it's free, because it's on the internet. And that's just like the way we've been conditioned to treat a lot of creative output on the internet. But at the same time, fanfic writers themselves are not sometimes completely clear on what is legal IP and copyright infringement and what is transformative. You know, it's pretty clear that like fanfic is legal if it's transformative, and you know, some big authors will go after fanfic writers, or they'll just say don't do this with my creative work. Others are like, go for it, I don't care. JK Rowling is one of those who says, you know, fanfic is chill. So there's a lot of
wow, the one chill thing that JK Rowling right, ever yeah. said.
Okay. Unexpectedly. Yeah,
rare JK Rowling world is W.
Yeah, and that's you know, people are obsessed with those books, that's why there's a ton of it. So but yeah, I think there's that kind of grayness in people's minds about what is and isn't legal in this world.
Sure.
So they feel like they can just kind of get away with reselling this stuff because they're like, well, it's on the internet for free anyway. You know, it's already someone else's like quote unquote IP, so I can just take it for my own. Yeah. I don't know. It's obviously a very flawed way to think about, you know, stealing someone's work is always bad, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
You mentioned that some fanfic writers were, you know, taking down entire bodies of work and that sort of thing. I mean, just what is some of the sentiment from these fanfic writers beyond just being pissed off, obviously? I mean, what's some of the reaction from some of the people in the community?
I mean, I think people are just kind of like bummed. Like, it's sad. One person said that they were taking their stuff down because of the unstoppable monetization of fandom. It's like they're putting this stuff out there for people to enjoy for free. They do it because they love it. People consume it because it's fun for them too. And, you know, then you have people swooping in and creating problems for everyone. Fandom usually is very protective of its own. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of coming into play. It's like, you know, almost like a statement to say, I'm taking all my stuff down. But, you know, I think they're worried about legal repercussions. I think they're worried about like these authors coming down on them and saying, hey, your name is on this book that is on Etsy for $160. You know, what the fuck?
Right.
So it's a risk. They feel like it's a risk for them. I'm not entirely sure how that would work legally. I would imagine they wouldn't, like an author wouldn't actually have a case against someone's stuff being resold in that way.
Right.
And suing the original writer because they're also a victim in this case. But yeah, people are just like really, really bummed. And it's you're losing big chunks of a community when that happens. You're losing like huge bodies of work. Like some of these fanfic books are thousands of pages. Like it's really a lot of writing goes into these. And then a lot of people spin off from those. So, you know, it's in like a internet historian slash preservation way, taking them down is sad because you're losing that huge part of that community. Yeah, I think a lot of people are just like, why are these few people ruining it for everyone?
Yeah.
The vibe.
Totally.
The legal aspect of it is super interesting. And I used to know a lot more about copyright. Like, I used to write about copyright quite a lot. But it's like, so fan fiction, there have been a couple like high profile fan fiction lawsuits and cease and desist letters and things like that. But theoretically, it's like, if the work is sufficiently transformative, then it is okay. And if it's okay to do, you can then like theoretically monetize it. It's like, if these authors wanted to sell books that are sufficiently transformative, they may like win in a court of law. The issue and the thing that always happens is that, like, I'm going to use Harry Potter as an example. J.K. Rowling has said it's chill, but it's like, let's say J.K. Rowling wanted to sue someone who did Harry Potter fan fiction. It's like the estate of J.K. Rowling and perhaps like Warner Brothers, who makes the movies, coming down on like a random person. And in order to fight that lawsuit, it's like, you know, you're looking at months at minimum, probably years of litigation to determine whether something is fair use or not. And it's like, people say like, oh, like fair use, which is this doctrine that says like, you can use copyrighted works if they're sufficiently transformative, or if it's just like a small snippet of it, or there's like a test, mm-hmm. a legal test, but there's no like preemptive claim of fair use. Like, fair use is like a legal defense that you use if you've been sued. Mm. And so it's like, your lawyers need to make that argument in a court at great expense to you. And so there's not been, to my knowledge, like a massive fan fiction court case that, you know, has been sort of like litigated to the end that would have legal force sort of throughout the entire United States, because, you know, there's different circuits and so on and so forth. It's like, there's not a Supreme Court case, to my knowledge, that says you can monetize Dramione fan fiction from Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so there's not been that, but then there's also not been the like copyright infringement of the people selling the books of these authors is more straightforward, I feel. It's like they're just taking it, selling it. You can't do that. That's right. Not chill. But it's like a copyright infringement on top of an unclear copyright situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the article is great, but it's just like, we live in a society where you can't actually test these things, because to test it would mean like random fan fiction author has to spend millions of dollars that they surely don't have fighting like Warner Brothers in court.
Right. Even if they're legally correct, the price involved in proving that is just going to be insurmountable. Speaking of things that you can't do though, Sam, I think my last question is, what was Etsy's response when you reached out? Because I found this particularly interesting.
Etsy, you know, was like, can I send you some stuff on background? I was like, okay, whatever.
Which, as always the case,
they just always, I mean, it's, if there's like extreme frustration in my voice, it's because it's extremely frustrating. Something that happens all the time with platforms is we've talked about this on this podcast before. You send them a bunch of links, you say, hey, can you explain to me where this falls under your terms of use that very clearly forbid this kind of thing? Like, that's usually how I approach it. I'm like, tell me why this is on your website. I'm not like, hey, this is on your website and it shouldn't be. I'm like,
right, that's not our job.
If there's a reason why it's on here, I would like to hear it, because it's confusing people. It's confusing me. So I sent them a handful of links to the really popular shops that were doing this bookbinding reselling, or like custom commissions of binding orders. And well, actually, let me back up. First, I messaged these different shops and their owners and said, hey, what's up? Like, why are you doing this? Do you know people are pissed off? Did you get consent from these writers? One of them went on like, it's like Etsy will say like, we're taking a short break. The shop is taking a break. Did that immediately, which was really funny.
That's really good.
Like, they were just like, we're closed. And then the other one stayed up. So I messaged Etsy. I was like, here's these links. What's the deal? And that's when they were like, let me tell you on background, this, this, and this, which is in the story. They were basically like, you know, this is like, this kind of thing is against our terms of use for copyright infringement or intellectual property. And the shops were taken down. It's like they were either put on like that we're taking a break status, or all the items were gone and they no longer were up. So,
I mean, yeah, what do you think of those removals? I found the fact that they removed them interesting. I'm not saying like they shouldn't have or they should have. I'm just, oh, that was kind of interesting. I don't know.
It is interesting. And that's the thing is like, I wasn't being like, you should take these down.
No.
But the terms do pretty clearly say like, you can't sell things that are someone else's intellectual property, which is a huge problem on Etsy.
Right.
It's something that I've written about before. I'm sure you guys have written about before at Vice. Like, it's a big problem of like original creators and artists getting their stuff ripped off and put on Etsy by just like, you know, dropship trash shops. Like, I read about one a while back of it was a comic store that this specific little drawing of a sloth was all over Etsy, and they were really pissed because that was their original like viral sloth illustration. So yeah, it's a big problem for Etsy in general, but I'm sure they just can't stay on top of every time it happens. And the really frustrating thing was, it's not like this was just like happening quietly. The original writers of the fanfic had been reporting these shops. Like, they told me that they were like, yeah, I spend a lot of time reporting when this comes up. I report it for copyright infringement or for, you know, intellectual property infringement. And there's a whole like portal on Etsy for reporting, specifically for reporting intellectual property violations. And they were like, it never works. It doesn't work. Hmm. So I just gave up.
It only worked when you...
Their wits end about it.
Yeah, only when you reached out did Etsy actually do anything.
Of course, which is always the fucking case.
Yeah.
It's like, it takes a journalist being like, hey, your users are trying to reach you about this problem. Can you comment or something? And then they're like, oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. All right, let's leave that story there. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you're a subscriber, we're going to come right back and we're going to talk about a right to repair victory in Oregon and maybe what else that means, you know, in the United States. You can subscribe and gain access to that content at 404media.co. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist-founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers only.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This section where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and a review. Here is one of those reviews from user Middle Toe. 404 Media's journalism has immediately had an outsized impact for their size, fantastic stories about the tech world covered in a way no one else is, and are genuinely making a difference. Thank you very much. This has been 404 Media. We'll see you again next week.